This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's the holiday, and we want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, belated Happy Hanukkah, or whatever holiday you're commemorating this time of year, or not commemorating. A lot of us are, you know, not commemorating in our usual fashion. It's kind of weird. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Layla Mudin is with us. She's our nutritionist in residence. And radio program at AOL.com gets your questions to us where we can then field them. Hi, Layla. How are you doing?
All right, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good, good. So I was thinking that this is our ultimate podcast for 2020, but it's actually our penultimate podcast for 2020. Huh. We're going to do another one next week if you're still up for it. Even amidst the holiday week, you know, we'll still have questions probably to field by then. Radio program at AOL.com, the destination for questions. If you have a little more downtime on your hands and you have some pressing questions, you know, whether it be about COVID-19, the vaccine, getting a lot of questions around those subjects, but also around our usual themes of intelligent medicine, the best of high tech and the best of natural therapies. We combine them for you here on Intelligent Medicine. It's been quite a year, hasn't it?
Oh, my, to say the least.
Yeah. And so,
to say the least.
It's going to be welcome to see the change of the year because we kind of want to flush 2020 away. A lot of hardship, a lot of disappointment and frustration, and frankly, illness and even bereavement for people. So, you know, as we approach the new year, with hopes, high hopes for the vaccine. We'll talk a little bit more about that with some questions around that subject. Are you ready to get a little ticked off?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm going to provoke you.
Okay.
I'm going to provoke.
I'll bite.
As an enlightened dietitian and master's degree nutritionist, here's something that's bound to raise your hackles. I just came across, this is from September 19, 2019. So it's a current recommendation from the Centers for Disease Control. Now, we have a lot of trust in the Centers for Disease Control, right? They issue proclamations during the pandemic, whatever. You know, use these precautions, socially distance, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not necessarily impugning those recommendations, but for a little perspective, here's their recommendation on diabetes. This comes under a section at the CDC website, cdc.gov. Carb counting. Mm-hmm. Eat well with diabetes. Here's what they say. On average, people with diabetes should aim to get about half of their calories from carbs. That means if you're normal.
I guess the CDC wants people to have their diabetes progress and then progress to coronary artery disease, and then they can die. Is that what the CDC wants? 50%.
The CDC, they're merchants of death. They're merchants of death. Okay, so what they're saying here is that means if you normally eat about 1,800 calories a day, to maintain a healthy weight, about 800 to 900 calories can come from carbs. Okay. So that's they say that translates to about 200 to 225 carb grams per day. Now, I don't think they're distinguishing between type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. Admittedly, people who shoot insulin and are insulin dependent, yeah, they need some carbs because...
yes, but they also, the type 1s also do not need 200,
right,
200 to 225 grams of carbs either.
Exactly. And
they don't.
Oh, you know, so, yeah. I mean, I think you're being a little tongue-in-cheek about the CDC. I merely think that the CDC is misguided. I would like to think that the CDC is not intentionally causing Americans to, since it is the Center for Disease Control, you know, it should not be the Center for Disease Propagation and Perpetuation. You know, they can call it the CDP, yeah, the Center for, you know, it's like...
They could call it the CDP. They should change. Yes.
It's like 1984. You know, it's like, you know, the agency of truth, you know, the Ministry of Truth is, you know, actually the Ministry,
yes,
of Propaganda. But I think merely they're misguided. I think what this is a, it's a calibration between the people who say, you know, Americans need to eat a lot of grains and a lot of whole grains. They want whole. They don't.
Yes.
Nobody wants. I don't think the CDC, yeah, wants us to eat a lot of sugar. You know, they say, you know, modest intake of sugar. Limit your sodas. Don't have a lot of soda. You know,
right,
it just, this is what you get when you get sort of mainstream recommendations that are, mm-hmm, ultimately pretty ineffective, you know, like the dietary guidelines for Americans,
yeah,
you know, purport to help Americans have a balanced diet. And frankly, if some Americans follow the dietary guidelines for America, the DGA, they'd be better off because they're consuming overwhelming amounts of junk. So, you know, maybe they're also saying, let's have modest expectations for people with diabetes. You know, Americans are hooked on carbs, so this for some people will be reducing their carbs, yeah, right, and
absolutely
restricting them.
Well, you know, there was another interesting article that actually you sent me, Dr. Hoffman, lately about the scientists who are, you know, saying that the dietary guidelines for Americans are meant for healthy people.
Yes, good
but
point.
The majority are not healthy.
Good point. In other words,
so there should be a caveat saying, you know, this is not the way for most of you to eat.
Right. So in other words, if you're a healthy triathlete, you know, and, you know, you put in a lot of miles and you're slim and you're not genetically predisposed to diabetes and you have no serious medical conditions, you don't have metabolic syndrome, which is actually, unfortunately, the exception rather than the rule, you can eat that,
yeah,
varied diet, which has plentiful,
yep,
carbohydrates. Because in effect, you're burning them off. You have an efficient metabolism for either genetic reasons or,
yeah,
lifestyle reasons. So you could do, but if you apply that to
What percentage of the population are you describing? Maybe 2%?
Yeah. I mean,
at the best 10?
I'll tell you, I think the actual figure that they came up,
yeah,
with, this is the NHANE study for people,
yes,
who are metabolically healthy, adults, was just 12%. They hit all the criteria for metabolic health. And that includes waist circumference. It includes, you know, blood tests. It includes a formal diagnosis of diabetes or, you know, high cholesterol, you know, not being on medication, not hypertension.
Right.
So, you know, that a very few adult Americans fit that criteria, 12%. So, you know, maybe they can eat those whole grain cereals for breakfast, you know, and they'll
exactly
do okay.
These public health messages are not meant for the public's health if they're only addressing 12% of the population.
Right. But, you know, there's
and for everybody else, you know, for the 88%, it should be go see a dietitian.
Right.
Go see your doctor.
That and which is called personalized nutrition, which is what we're all about.
Yes.
Right. You know, that it not one size fits all nutrition. No single guideline, I think, is going to be applicable. And yeah, so I think this is also, I guess the word I was looking for is triangulation. In other words, if you get like extreme viewpoints, you know, like ketogenic diet on one hand, and you get, you know, vegan whole grain diet on the other hand. So you triangulate and you kind of go to the middle. And that's, I think, what they're sort of doing there. And I think that's also what happens when you formulate guidelines by committee. You know, it's like a bunch of people sit down and hammer it out. It's kind of like Congress. You know, when Congress comes up with a COVID relief bill, it's a mishmash. It's like, oh, you know, I can't believe all this junk that's in there. But they had to compromise because, like, one side wanted this and the other side wanted that. And, you know, they were at loggerheads and it was Christmas and, you know, ended up with
And all the special interests are winning. It's the same with dietary committees.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're also funded by big food, big agro.
That too.
All of that.
No, and I think they're under pressure too, because let's say they come up with a guideline that says, don't eat any grains, which might actually be a salutary guideline. I mean, we do that with some patients and they just do marvelously. Oh, what a blowback from, you know, agriculture that is a mainstay of the rural economy of America. You know, it's like, what? The government says don't eat grains? Well, for some people, that might be, you know, a paleo diet approach might be an advisable approach. But if they were to say it, what a firestorm of protest. You know, and, you know, from the standpoint of the vegetarians, they're never going to say, don't eat meat, because it's that, you know, the meat industry would be up in arms. So they're going to say, moderate your consumption of everything. Have everything in moderation. Well, moderation, unfortunately, gets us moderately fat, moderately diabetic, moderately hypertensive Americans who have to take statins.
Moderate metabolic syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
For all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, don't die now, die later. You know, it's the kind of thing. All right, so enough railing. You know, I just thought I'd, I don't know, I'm kind of a provocateur. I knew I'd, you know, get your goat with that. So let's get to questions, please. And remind our listeners, radioprogram@AOL.com, the destination for questions. What's up?
Okay. We've got an email from Jeremy, and this is following an email he sent to us the previous week that we didn't get to. And it's regarding COVID-19 and questioning the mainstream narrative. This is what he writes. Dear Dr. Hoffman, you might be interested, after my email from last week, in this article via GreenMed Info that Michael Yeadon, PhD, former vice president and chief scientific advisor for Pfizer, the pharmaceutical who did the first vaccine, and founder and CEO of the biotech company Ziarko, has recently been speaking about how PCR testing is being used to manufacture the appearance of a pandemic that doesn't really exist. And he is very measured and grounded. And here's what it says, that the genetic sequences used in PCRs to detect suspected SARS-CoV-2 and to diagnose cases of illnesses and death attributed to COVID-19 are present in sequences, in dozens of sequences of the human genome itself. And in those of about 100 microbes.
Yeah. So,
and that includes,
Can I just
that
interject?
That includes the initiators, primers, and all of that.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And we're going to get to a question where, which critiques me a little bit for interrupting, but I'm going to jump in here before we go too far down the line on this one. And you can continue.
So the most extensive fragments taken at random from their supposed genome and even the so-called target genes allegedly specific to the new coronavirus. The test is worthless and all positive results obtained so far should be scientifically invalidated and communicated to those affected.
Okay.
Under certain conditions, the point is, and this is from Stephen Buston, one of the world's leading experts on PCR, in fact, says that under certain conditions, anyone can test positive.
All right. So this is, let me react to that. And you know, let me react on a couple of levels. First of all, on one level, you know, for virtually everything that has occurred, every dramatic event or disease that has occurred in my lifetime, there has been pushback of a rather extreme nature usually around conspiracy theories. So, for example, you know, there's people who believe that 9/11 didn't happen, that it was a a flag event,
right.
You know, that
a false
it was
flag.
False flag event, that it was engendered by the U.S. government so that we could enter an imperialistic war, and that explosives were implanted and they were the detonations were consistent with explosions in the buildings. Okay, so that's then when AIDS happened, I remember the same thing. They said there is no such thing as the AIDS virus. The AIDS virus is not responsible for AIDS. It doesn't fulfill what's called Koch's postulate, which means you can't demonstrate that you transmit the disease. Yeah, Koch's postulate. And that so really it's a disease that's related to poor nutrition and drug use and promiscuity because people are depleted. People are depleted, mm-hmm. and that's how they, so it's a disease, you know, right. So there was that. Then there was, you know, even like the walk on the moon, they say, well, that was done on a soundstage in Hollywood, you know, to bolster the prestige of America. I mean, a lot of people still believe that. So there are these extreme views. Now, this one on the PCR does have some basis in fact, which is that PCR, polymerase chain reaction, has the possibility of going awry. Why? Because it's so very sensitive that it can pick up viral fragments that are mm-hmm. dead. So if you're PCR positive, it's not entirely clear that you have infectious COVID-19. He's going a step further. He's saying not only is it too sensitive, he's saying that there are what are called homologies between certain things that are present anyway in the body that yeah. resemble the virus. So the test is completely worthless. Well, no, it's not completely worthless. It is somewhat, I think, exaggerates the cases. We, you know, the term has been coined casedemic, which is like, oh my God, we're yes. seeing all these cases. We're seeing all these cases. And then clearly there is some controversy over whether government should harness these statistics, which may be exaggerated, to enact shutdowns, lockdowns, government edicts, etc. You know, so that, I mean, I get that argument. I mean, but I can't say that the PCR test is invalid. And, you know, I also think that a lot of people are getting sick and I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, we know of people who've gotten sick. Most of right. the people that we know who've gotten sick, they recover very quickly. I mean, they're generally people who, per our advice, are taking a lot of vitamin D and zinc and elderberry and things like that. We don't know anybody in our practice or even in our circle, our personal circle, who's been hospitalized or died from this. So,
well, the other point that Jeremy is making, Dr. Hoffman, he's from Great Britain, by the way,
yeah.
that over there, when they're using the test, they're using 45 amplification
right.
cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that the test is effectively corrupt.
Yeah.
And that people do not understand this.
Yeah.
And in England, he says most people still consider that this is the number of COVID hospital admissions and deaths that are increasing, whereas nothing can be further from the truth.
Well, that's where I disagree. I think, yes, there is some exaggeration.
Yeah.
But nothing could be further from the truth is a wrong statement. There are also people who state incorrectly that less people have died this year than in previous years. So what does that mean? That means that maybe we've transferred some of the deaths that would have ordinarily occurred due to natural causes, and we've attributed them to COVID because people test positive for COVID, but COVID wasn't
right.
the cause of their death because they were on
I've
death's
heard the
door
line.
Anyway.
Nobody's dying of heart disease and cancer anymore. They're just dying of COVID.
Not actually true, because there are excess deaths yeah. this year. And some of the yeah. excess deaths are actually non-COVID related. They're due to suicide. They're due to, domestic violence and crime and overdose
related to lockdown more than anything,
or
to COVID,
or delayed medical care. You know, people who say, "Well, you know, I do have this chest pressure and pain, and it is radiating down my arm, but I just really don't want to go to the hospital because it's dangerous to go to the hospital or the doctor." And then they're dead the next day because they didn't listen to the warning signs of a heart attack. Okay, so we are seeing excess deaths. 2/3 of them may be directly attributable to COVID-19. 1/3 not. But you know, I got to say, here's just something that I'm asking people to do. And we have been canceled by some people. They say, unsubscribe me from your newsletter because you're writing about the vaccine, like you think it's a good thing. And, you know, it's just a terrible thing and nobody should take it. And it's a conspiracy. And you don't talk about, you know, Fauci and cahoots with Bill Gates. We'll get to that later. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to be objective about it. And I got to say, I've been burned a lot of times by conventional medicine. You know, I've been asked to prescribe drugs, which later turned out to be very toxic and dangerous. We see the CDC. We just talked about the credibility of the CDC. I question pronouncements by the CDC because when they're so wrong about the major pandemic that our country is suffering, not COVID-19, but metabolic syndrome, diabetes, diabesity, they're so wrong about their dietary recommendations. Their recommendations about other things bear scrutiny and some degree of skepticism. We've seen all kinds of vaccine havoc unleashed on people. You know, the swine flu vaccine was really a blow to the credibility of vaccinations. On the other hand,
some people got Guillain-Barré syndrome from that, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
And so there, I am a critic of conventional medicine, but I got to say, I'm not reflexly a critic that everything that comes out of conventional medicine, the pharmaceutical industry, and the vaccine industry is either a conspiracy or a unmitigated danger. And, I also am very suspicious of stuff that comes from the government. You know, pronouncements about I try to look behind the statistics and critique the statistics, which is warranted. But to completely repudiate the potential benefits of the vaccine and to downplay the seriousness of the pandemic, I think it's ideological. It's not even rational or even-handed. You know what I'm saying? It's like people have an entrenched belief. You know, they believe in natural medicine, and anything that's not natural medicine, they believe is harmful or dangerous. And, you know, the way that we're going to get through this and the way that we're going to get through the 21st century is through a combination of high tech and natural in a balanced proportion. And that I call that intelligent medicine. That's my mandate. That's my perspective. Some people are going to say, enough of that. I don't want to hear anything good about the vaccine. So, Dr. Hoffman, I'm canceling you. And Layla, I'm canceling you.
It's cancel culture.
Yeah, right. What you can do is, you see something on cable and you don't like it, you just switch the channel. It's like, this is not my flavor. You know, I don't like vanilla. I like chocolate. So I'm going to switch to another channel that reinforces my confirmation bias, I think we've got to get away from that. We've got to have an open mind. And with so many conflicting facts, it's very hard to keep an open mind because you feel like your head's on a swivel.
Yeah. It does feel like that at times. Right. Right.
So,
okay.
And by the way, I read that very long dissertation, you boiled it down by this fellow
Jeremy,
from England.
Yes.
And these, the people who are writing this, they're not stupid. They're some of the best and brightest people. Their critique is colored by such a skeptical perspective on government, on authority, on the medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry, that they can marshal these very esoteric technical facts to buttress their argument. And that's where I think they've have gone astray. So I would just ask, you know, keep an open mind. Let's, you know, trust but verify, you know, the vaccine's out there. Let's just watch very carefully how it it proceeds, you know, whether it's effective, whether it's safe. We got a big problem here is that, you know, our economy and our society is stuck and we've got to move forward. And this may be a way of opening up, you know, returning to a semblance of normal life.
Yeah. But I do want to thank Jeremy for this very, very thoughtful email and this link to the GreenMedInfo article.
Right.
Which is something I read regularly, GreenMedInfo,
right.
Sayre G.
And I will tell you this, I had Sayre G on the program. I wanted him to share his views, but his views are very controversial, and so much so that I think in with his commitment to what his truth is, they've really throttled down on GreenMedInfo. There's been tremendous censorship. There's been shadow banning and outright banning.
Oh, yes.
And it's, I mean, to the detriment of his business model,
right.
You know, it's kind of, you can go to, you can find GreenMedInfo, but you have to subscribe to the newsletter. It's really hard to find it on social media because they've so, they've throttled down 95% on it.
Right.
It's just a trickle that comes out from GreenMedInfo because questioning the vaccine.
Right. Apropos to what's happening even in the world, I mean, there's new social media now. There's other.
Yes.
You know, besides Twitter, besides Facebook, there's Parler, there's WeMe, there's Telegram, there are others. And, you know, rightfully so. I like seeing that because I'm against any and all censorship. Mm-hmm. I am for the First Amendment. Let me be clear.
Yeah.
So
there are other places you can source that, but I got to say that those are emerging channels of communication that at this point are, you know, it's like David and Goliath in terms of competing with these mainstream, you know, Google and Wikipedia and Facebook and Twitter, which, in my opinion, they have a lot of bias with regard to unpopular beliefs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So far, but I will say this, here's an encouraging thing, and, you know, we got to get to a break because I don't want to overextend part one. But I was really worried because the last few weeks in October and into early November, our traffic was way down. And I said, what's going on? Are we being throttled down by social media? But I think what it was the presidential election was just getting, was so engrossing for people that they gravitated more to political stuff and not medical stuff. Our traffic is up almost 200% since the election, as people are coming back to Facebook and Twitter to follow the kind of stuff that we put out there. And, you know, of course, we've had 8 million downloads of our podcast and counting now. There's a lot of hunger for this information. And I to keep our brand is intelligent medicine, which means we're trying to take a balanced view of what's out there and even, you know, evaluating theories that are fringy.
Yes.
But also applying that same scrutiny to the mainstream pronouncements, because we're not going to just accept them on the face of them because there are vested interests that want the American public to just roll up their sleeves and, you know, keep their masks on and, you know, sit in their apartments.
You know? Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, shut up and comply. And we know what's better, you know, we know what's good for you. Well, we know that a lot of the people who think you're going to tell us what's good for us, they've let us down in the past. So we'll try not to.
True.
We'll try not to just, you know, parrot their party line. All right. We got to go to a break because we divide our podcast into two parts. What's coming up in part two? What questions are we going to tackle?
Oh, I'm considering having surgery for pelvic organ prolapse, but most doctors use polypropylene mesh. Mm-hmm. Will I get an autoimmune condition from that mesh?
All right, we'll talk about that. Take it up the mesh used for conditions like hernias, pelvic organ prolapse, dropped bladder, dropped uterus. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back.